From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Well, they're here. Robots are roaming the aisles of local grocery and retail stores. Walmart announced this week that thousands of robots will be in stores nationwide. They'll be scanning shelves, scrubbing floors, unloading trucks. The company says the robots will pick up some of the repetitive tasks employees don't enjoy, while also allowing Walmart to develop jobs for workers that are better suited to the 21st century. Now, managing that transition well is absolutely critical because workers right now may also look at the robots not as opportunities, but as replacements. This hour on Point, robots in your grocery store. And you can join us. Have you seen a robot in your grocery store recently? Do you welcome the influx of new technology to places like grocery and retail stores? Does it make you concerned about the future of work? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, we're going to start first today with a closer look at the actual technology that's coming to a Walmart near you. And joining us from San Diego, California, is David Pinn, Vice President of Strategy for the artificial intelligence company Brain Corp. Brain Corp creates the software for Walmart's autonomous floor cleaners, which will be deployed in some 1,500 stores nationwide. David Pinn, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Mega. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. First of all, can you just describe to us what these autonomous floor scrubbers look like and how they'll work in Walmart stores?
Sure. So a lot of people, when they see the robots, they think of them as little miniature Zambonis. So if you've ever been in an airport late at night, you might see one of these driving around cleaning up the hard floors. And so these machines are typically driven by a janitor for about 2 to 3 hours each night up and down the aisles, just kind of scrubbing and cleaning and vacuuming up all the debris on the floor. And what we do is we provide the technology that allows those manually driven machines to be driven autonomously.
I see. Now, so folks might be familiar with the at-home-based concept of like a Roomba, right, that docks itself when it's not needed. And you can program it to come out and clean whenever it wants. Is that something is what you're deploying in Walmart stores sort of a retailer industrial scale of a similar idea?
In some ways, it's a lot bigger, obviously, to clean a Walmart than a Roomba. And I think the really important part is that, unlike a Roomba where you just sort of set it off and it kind of randomly explores the space and cleans when it cleans, with this robot, we really rely on the janitor to program it and teach it what the janitor knows about that particular space. So the setup essentially is that the robot arrives, the janitor drives it around exactly the way that it should be driven in that environment, depending on the local climate, depending on the local foot traffic. And with the janitor's help, the robot learns exactly what is the best way to clean that particular space.
Does the robot then have to be retrained when the store changes its floor layout or any other sort of unexpected complexities might happen?
It can be, for sure. Yeah, we consider the robot to be a tool for the janitor. So, as the janitor sees that the environment might need tweaking, that the robot might be able to be optimized, absolutely we see the role of the janitor to ensure the robot's operating to its maximum efficiency.
Okay. So from a technological point of view, what are the biggest challenges of doing this job well, autonomously, in a vast space like a Walmart store?
Yeah, there are huge challenges, that Brain Corp is helping to solve. If you think about robots historically, they first showed up in the 1960s in factory environments around highly trained workers, often caged off, away from the general public. Here we see robots having the ability to safely navigate in crowded, open-to-the-public spaces. And so the software and AI technology behind that to ensure that the robot can figure out where it is in a space and knows how to get from A to B safely is the real breakthrough here.
So they'll be at work while the store's open? Because I was just automatically presuming it would be overnight, for example.
Cleaning is typically performed during off hours just so that, you can clean the spaces that would otherwise be crowded. But a lot of stores are open 24/7. Mm. Typically, they're clean between 6 and 8 in the morning when it's a little bit quieter. But certainly, there are customers around when Brain Corp robots are driving.
Mm. Now, Walmart is going to add these floor scrubbers to 1,500 of their stores nationwide. So how many actual scrubbers are we talking about?
1,500.
Oh, so it's one per store? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. And Walmart won't tell us how much it's costing them. Can you?
Unfortunately, I can't comment on that. And the reason is because, you know, BrainCorp is an enablement technology. Our approach is to work with companies that are building the manual machines and help provide them the software that turns those manual machines into robots. So really, it's about empowering those companies, some of which have over 100 years of experience building floor cleaning machines, helping them turn themselves from manual floor cleaning companies into robotics companies.
I see. Okay. So, David, let me just ask you here. Obviously, you heard in the introduction that we're going to explore through the course of this hour what the impacts, positive and negative, are to human workers as we see more automation in spaces like grocery stores and retail stores. I mean, when I hear you say that a janitor is going to at first drive the robot around and train it on how to do the job that the janitor used to do, what's your response to the criticism that you're asking janitors to train a robot out of his or her own job?
You know, I really view it similar to the analogy of a screwdriver versus a power drill. You know, if you think about criticizing a construction company for giving a construction worker a power drill instead of a screwdriver, in my mind, it's a similar criticism talking about giving a janitor a robotic floor scrubber versus forcing them to manually drive this thing around. And the reason is this is simply a way for the janitor to be that much more productive, right? This is a tool in their arsenal to allow them to do their job more effectively.
Okay, so David Pinn, stand by for just a second. David is Vice President of Strategy for BrainCorp. They are creating the software for Walmart's autonomous floor scrubbers, which will soon be deployed in 1,500 Walmarts nationwide. David, I'm going to turn now to Andrew McAfee. He is co-director of the MIT Initiative on the Digital Economy, associate director of the Center for Digital Business at the MIT Sloan School of Management as well, and co-author of several books about the future of work and automation, including Machine Platform Crowd, Harnessing Our Digital Future, and the Second Machine Age. Andrew McAfee, it's good to see you again.
Megna, always a pleasure.
So here we are. You and I over many years have talked about the various places in which we're seeing automation be introduced. Do you think it was inevitable that we would see it in grocery stores and retail?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Retail is a huge industry. It employs a ton of people, and the march of technology makes more and more stuff feasible. So as we just heard, it might not have been technologically feasible to do the robot floor scrubber 10 years ago, but here we are. Thanks to better sensors and machine learning and stuff like that, that's suddenly within reach. Of course, we should expect to see these kinds of things happen.
Now, I mean, looking into the future 2, 5, 10 years, I don't know. I mean, I hear David right now saying this is a power drill as opposed to a screwdriver for the janitor, him or herself. How long can that last before the floor scrubber becomes the janitor?
Well, that analogy is really interesting because we have seen technologies in retail that are like the power drill. And the scanner at checkout is a really good example of that. It makes the checkout clerk more efficient, but it doesn't remove the need for that person. The interesting wrinkle here is that, as you pointed out, once the janitor trains the robot to do the floor scrubbing, that janitor isn't necessary for floor scrubbing anymore. So it's kind of taking one task off the list of things that a janitor does.
Yeah. But do you think companies are doing a good job? And I mean, look, Walmart is so massive that people are going to watch how they handle this transition to more automated work. Are they doing a good job in saying, okay, well, now we have this human time that's freed up with after the janitors train these floor scrubbers, what else are they going to have them do?
Yeah. And is there any shortage of work that needs to get done in a great big store like a Walmart? And one step further, is there any shortage of work that needs to get done that can't be done by today's technology or tomorrow's technology? I would answer yes to both of these questions. So I don't see that the era of peak labor hours necessary to run a Walmart store, that's not happening tomorrow, and it's not happening because of a robot floor scrubber, I don't think.
Okay. David Pinn, what's your response to that? What do you think about what Andy McAfee is saying?
Yeah, I think Andy makes a really good point. Our perspective is that, yes, this takes one task away from the janitor, but I think we would all agree that grocery stores could always be cleaner, and this gives the janitor the opportunity to spend more time cleaning shelves, cleaning bathrooms, all other tasks that can help elevate retail experience.
And so, I mean, you're looking now at, you are working right now with Walmart, I should say. There are other grocery stores that are deploying similar types of technology. How quickly do you think this could spread across grocery and retail across the country, David?
I think it could spread very quickly. You know, I think the technology breakthrough is there. You know, as Andrew pointed out, you know, the ability for these machines now to navigate safely in these environments is really taken off. And I think Walmart is, you know, clearly one of the leaders in this space, and we expect essentially all the other retailers to follow very quickly.
Mm. Well, David Pinn, Vice President of Strategy for Brain Corp, which is creating the software for Walmart's autonomous floor scrubbers, with us today from San Diego, California. David Pinn, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Andrew McAfee, we've got to take a break in a minute here, but we have this comment that's come in from TG on our website. TG says, the robots are there to serve the store owner, not the customer. Of course, same is true with self-checkout. Wages and benefits are expensive. What do you think?
I don't necessarily agree with that distinction. The interest of the store owner are well served with happy customers who are getting better service in a cleaner store, enjoying lower prices. I don't think those interests are misaligned. I do think, though, that it's not always the case that the interest of the store owner are perfectly aligned with all the employees in the store. Labor is a cost. Companies have really, really strong incentive to minimize costs. Let's not pretend that that's not the case.
Okay, well, we are talking about the fact that Walmart and some other grocery stores and retailers are starting to deploy robots in their stores to clean floors, as we talked about, to restock shelves, to take products off trucks as well. And what do you think about it? Is it going to make your experience at a grocery store more efficient, better, or are you concerned about the future of work for those workers in the stores? We're going to hear from someone on that front when we come back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the fact that robots may be coming to a grocery or retail store near you. That's because Walmart is saying that it's going to launch robotic workers in some 1,500 stores nationwide, doing everything from cleaning floors to unloading trucks and even stocking shelves. Here's a promotional video for the Auto S shelf-scanning robot made by the robotics company Bossa Nova. And in this promotional video, Dave, a Walmart employee, is trying to stock some snacks.
Dave needs to restock her favorite snacks before Liz makes it from the store's entrance here to aisle 7, here. Unfortunately for Dave, he also has to fix a product display here, assist customers here and here, replace a missing price label here, before arriving in aisle 7 where he notices the missing snacks. By the time Liz's favorite snacks were ready for her, Liz was already exiting the store empty-handed. Let's try that again. This is a Bossa Nova robot. It continuously scans all the aisles, keeping track of out-of-stock items, missing or misplaced labels, incorrect pricing, and misplaced products.
A promotional video there from the robotics company Bossa Nova, which makes the Auto S shelf-scanning robot. Well, what do some workers think about this? This is Jim Carvalho, political director for a Massachusetts chapter of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. He told WBUR, our home station, last month that automation is actually part of union contract discussions with the Stop and Shop grocery chain.
I think a lot of people will look at this automation in any sense and say, well, that's the future and that's, you know, decades away. But we feel, and I feel, that this is actually a lot closer to our doorstep than a lot of people realize. Marty the robot doesn't eat, so he's not going to be shopping at Stop and Shop after a shift like our members do all the time.
That's Jim Carvalho, political director in Massachusetts for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I'm joined today by Andy McAvey. He's co-director of the MIT Initiative on the Digital Economy and co-author of Machine Platform Crowd, Harnessing Our Digital Future, and co-author of The Second Machine Age as well. And joining us now is Erica Canuti. She's with us from Somerville, Massachusetts today. She's communications director for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which represents 1.3 million workers in grocery stores, retail, and other industries. Erica Canuti, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to join this conversation.
All right, so we heard a little bit from the UFCW there in that clip that I just played, but how does the union overall look at ever-increasing automation in grocery and retail stores?
I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people ask me, you know, oh, you guys are part of a union. Are you just worried about losing the jobs? And I think that it's, you know, sure, we're worried about losing jobs, but it's bigger than that. We see a lot of the technology that's being produced today in these stores is kind of technology for technology's sake. It's not serving a customer need. Customers don't like self-checkout. It takes longer. You have to fumble with the different items yourself because you don't know where the UPC codes are. And it's work that the company used to do for you and is now putting on you. And I don't know about you, but I've never gotten a discount for using a self-checkout machine when I walk out the door. No one's contributing to my retirement fund or providing me health care. And that's the kind of thing where we're shifting that work onto the consumer. It's not a consumer innovation. And that's something that that our workers are really concerned about. We also know that the overall kind of push to reduce work and to dehumanize work is also providing just worse overall service. People like having other humans to talk to, someone who smiles at you and says thank you. I mean, everybody who works hard for their money, who goes into a store and hands it over to a company would like to have some sort of acknowledgement and dignity to that. That transaction and that kind of point of, at the point of sale is really important. You know, we're the people who put your name on the birthday cakes. We're the people that slice the deli meat that you put in your kids' sandwiches. We're, you know, your neighbors and friends. And when they reduce that kind of service and kind of put giant overgrown Roombas in like Marty, you know, we can see that customers are bothered by it, and it's something that concerns us.
Right. So Marty, the robot that Stop and Shop is trying out in its aisles. Andrew McAvey, let me turn back to you on this, because, yes, I know that people are doing a lot more of their shopping, obviously, online, even their grocery shopping. But for folks who still go to grocery and retail stores, the social experience, the human interaction is actually a very important part of it, as Eric is pointing out here. So, you know, is that factor of the shopping experience sort of ebbing away now?
I think there probably are some people who get value out of the social interaction that Erica described, but there are also people who go to a physical store who just want to get the product and get back on with their lives. I use self-checkout, and when I do, I realize I'm doing the company a favor, but I'm also doing me a favor. I use it because I think I'm competent enough at it, and the lines are not as long, so I get back on with my day more quickly. I've also had the experience of putting a couple items in my pocket and walking out of a store and not being arrested for shoplifting because I was in one of the Amazon Go stores that has eliminated checkout altogether. I didn't find that a diminished experience, I have to confess.
Okay. So, by the way, the Amazon Go stores where you just pick something off the shelf and because what, Amazon is tracking you with cameras and all sorts of sensors.
Amazon has a very rich cocktail of technology in the background that can see what I'm putting in my basket or in my pocket. It can see if I've put it back on the shelf so I actually don't want it. I walked out the store and 30 seconds later I got an email with my receipt.
So Erica Canuti, how would you respond to what Andy McAfee is saying?
Well, I mean, I think that that just goes to prove, you know, the actual point that a lot of this technology isn't based on consumer innovation or providing a better service to customers. And it's actually a lot very short-sighted because there are people that walk out. The losses are much higher for self-checkout, and companies know that. And Walmart included has been a company that has rolled back the self-checkout. And, you know, as my colleague from UFCW mentioned, this is why we work with our employers on kind of doing technology in a smart way. If you have a self-checkout that's unmanned, and, you know, Andy, I'm glad you feel very confident using them, but that's not everybody, you know, that there's somebody there to help people, because it's not just that people walk out, as a promotional video said, when they don't see an item on the shelf or if there's a spill on the floor. They walk out when they're not getting the help that they need. Mm. They can't make a decision, or if there's nobody to talk to, they walk out of the store. And the grocery industry knows this, but they're solving a different problem. To your point earlier, they're trying to reduce the cost of labor to the, you know, even at their own expense, in increasing shoplifting and increasing customer dissatisfaction. And you're right, customers want to get in and out of the stores. However, are you responding to the fact that the companies have been understaffing the checkout lanes? I mean, everyone's seen 10 empty lanes not being staffed, and they're being kind of forced and driven into self-checkout. If the lanes were all open and staffed and the lines were moving faster, you know, wouldn't you want to go into that line? And there's been studies that have shown this. They have a study out of Atlanta that, you know, kind of did keep grocery people going, you know, going through their own self-checkout, moving their own items versus an actual, you know, person and cashier. Mm. And the cashier is faster.
Well, so Andy, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting distinction here between the kinds of interaction that almost all of us would value. Help me find a product somewhere on the shelf. Explain to me the difference between these things. Kind of point me in the right direction. I would love more of that. And I think that's still a very, very human job. But is the step of checking out of a store, is that value added for most consumers? I would say that it's not. And you don't have to look too far into your crystal ball to see that that step is actually going to go away in in-person retail environments in the not crazy distant future. Fighting against that tide feels like a bad strategy to me.
So Erica Canuti, we could focus on checkout a lot because it's a major touch point, obviously, in the retail experience. But I wanted to actually ask you to respond to a couple of things that Walmart told us. We reached out to them, obviously, to see if they would join us, and they declined. But they sent us a statement, a pretty beefy one, actually. And there's three different parts of what they say that I'd love your view on. Okay, so first of all, Walmart told us in their statement that the technology is automating pieces of work rather than entire jobs. And as that's happening, they've been able to use many of the hours that are saved in terms of worker hours in other areas of the store. Walmart also says, we've now added over 40,000 jobs for the online grocery picking role in stores over just the last year and a half. Those jobs did not exist a short time ago, and the results so far for Walmart, we've seen our U.S. store associate turnover reduced year over year. So they're saying the technology is helping them, and Walmart workers specifically, transition to a new economy or a new kind of role that retail and grocery has to play. What do you think?
I mean, we're not Luddites here. We're not saying that all technology is bad. I mean, that is certainly not the case. And there are a lot of times where, you know, the electric screwdriver example is definitely better than a screwdriver. We just want to make sure that they're not investing in Rube Goldberg machines, you know, 7-foot-tall towers that come over. And actually, you know, right now, Marty the robot doesn't clean up spills. He just stops and then hijacks a PA system and says, spill every 30 seconds. Which would interrupt somebody who was having, you know, was in the middle of serving a customer or, you know, answering someone's question and force them to go over and turn Marty off. So, like, that's an example where I get it, it's early stage technology they're testing, but in terms of disrupting workflow, you know, it's not giving somebody an electric screwdriver, it's giving somebody a giant Rube Goldberg machine that doesn't actually take work off. And I think the other thing about this is, you know, we do want to see technology rolling in a smart way. We do think there is a massive shift in this economy, and we are going to see jobs change. The future of work does not look like the future of today, you know, the work of today, and that's okay. But, you know, where, you know, going back to the example of Amazon Go, where you've seen a lot of companies in their corporate PR releases have talked about how we're going to take away those kind of smaller pieces of work that distract, you know, the people in the stores from actually providing good customer service, but we're not seeing them when they actually, like, in terms of actually investing in training. You don't go to Walmart and get, you know, world-class cheesemonger or sommelier. And I think you look at some of the other grocery chains like Whole Foods and Wegmans, where you see that people were willing to pay more for knowledgeable service. And if these companies were investing more in their workers, creating more full-time positions, training people, sending them in to learn more and more about the products and the food, I think you would see that that would be a worthy investment. You know, again, we're not against technology. We just want it to be technology that makes sense for workers and makes sense for consumers and is actually a value add. There is, you know, a concern about technology that just comes into, prop up the shareholders' bottom line and does so at the expense and really perverts supply and demand.
Right.
I mean, well, we know, and grocery stores know, the average person spends $10 more per trip when they talk to somebody at the deli counter. Yet we're seeing these same companies who are talking about service pushing people towards packaged meats and trying to reduce actual human deli service.
Yeah, well,
so I think there's a little bit of lip service they should be held accountable for.
So Erica, forgive me for interrupting there, but I just wanted to jump in and on the point you're making, just add a little bit more of what Walmart has told us. They say that, quote, it's important to keep in mind that the tasks that are being automated are generally things that Walmart struggles to find, hire, and retain associates to do. And they've started changing the job to take out some of that routine work. It's becoming easier for Walmart to find people to do those jobs. But Andrew McAfee, Erica Knudy is making an excellent point, which I think every time we talk about automation coming further and further into different sectors, we always come back to. And that is, okay, if robots are taking over the routine work and doing certain jobs that people used to do, are companies doing enough? Are societies doing enough then to say, all right, well, here are the future jobs that we need to train people to do? I mean, that's the critical question here. Are we doing enough?
And I think, very broadly speaking, no. We should be doing more in our educational system. We should be encouraging and incentivizing innovators and entrepreneurs to come up with these new kinds of jobs that do rely on the skills that are still human. And that has to do with dealing with other human beings. That has to do with identifying problems and solving them. It has to do with navigating this weird human-built world that we've created. The technology is still lousy at that. Unfortunately, a lot of the jobs that we create to do those things are also lousy jobs. We can work on that.
All right, let's finally go to the phones here. Let's go to Tammy, who's calling from Snow Hill, North Carolina. Tammy, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering, for many people in the disabled community, especially those with developmental disabilities, they really, and I don't want to stereotype, but many of them enjoy these repetitive type jobs. They enjoy the familiarity of knowing what they're going to be doing each day and each shift. I'm wondering, would we not be better served if Walmart would take an interest in hiring these people to do these repetitive jobs? It just would seem a more human route to go, and I'm just wondering what are the thoughts on that. Walmart could make a huge impact on the disabled community by giving these jobs to those folks. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Tammy, thank you so much for your call. Erica Knudy, what would you like to tell her?
Well, I think Tammy's touching on something that's really important, and that's for us as a society to really think about and value what it means to have a job, a place to go, the ability to contribute to the world around us. And I think that matters not just for someone who may be mentally disabled, but for somebody like me too. You know, I want to be able to know where I'm going to work and that my work matters. And I think socially, the government has provided tax breaks and incentives for companies to come and create jobs. But what happens when these companies are getting hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks, and instead of creating jobs or kind of filling that social benefit and supporting that social benefit, they are trying to eliminate jobs with them? And so I think that there's just a broader conversation, and we do need to have conversations, and there should be role for government here to state that maybe you don't get tax incentives unless you're providing X number of jobs for disabled workers, or maybe unless you're investing X number of dollars into retraining and retaining workers. But that's what our tax dollars should be going to, and the conversations that we should be having, and we should be voting that way. Politicians aren't talking about this. This is really absent from the conversation. And you talk to a doctor who's worried about being automated in diagnostics. You talk to a journalist who's being worried about being automated. There's all kinds, it's across the board. It isn't just jobs that pay lower wages. It's every job. Everybody that I talk to in every walk of life is worried about what this means for their future.
Yeah.
And I think we need to have a bigger conversation about the social impact and value of certain certain behaviors by companies.
Well, so Andrew McAfee, on that point, we have a comment coming in from Rachel Von Cabbage, who actually begins by saying jobs are not the be-all and end-all. They shouldn't be. She says automation was predictable and should free our society from certain jobs. But then Rachel says, until we start to implement healthcare for all and universal basic incomes, these machines will just push the wealth gap even further apart. So accept automation, but also strive to make everyone's lives better. What do you think?
It reminds me of that great Arthur C. Clarke quote. He said, we should have, because of automation and technology, 100% unemployment so that we can all go play. I just wish I agree with that more. I'm with Erica on this one. A job and work and the social bonds that you form and the community that you become part of, man, these are important in today's world. I would love to imagine some sci-fi future where we can be Arthur C. Clarke and just go play all the time. We're not there right now. And when I look at the communities in the country that have been kind of left behind by this long economic expansion and you see that the jobs are not there, these are not healthy places. It's a problem we got to work on.
Well, Andrew McAfee and Erica Canutti, stand by here for just a moment. We are talking about the fact that Walmart and other major grocery stores and retailers are experimenting with putting robots in their aisles to do things like clean up floors, restock shelves, even take produce off of trucks. And what that means for you, the person who shops at these stores, for the workers who work in them. We have a comment here on Facebook. Abby Krim says, they've got one at my mom's Stop and Shop. Mostly it blocks the aisles. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about robots, maybe in your local grocery store or retail store, in part because giant Walmart is launching some robot, quote unquote, workers in more than 4,000 of its stores across the country. They'll be doing things like scrubbing floors, restocking shelves, taking items off of trucks, and they're in some Stop and Shop stores as well. Are we seeing now in grocery and retail more evidence of what our automated future will look like, and how are we as a society managing that transition in a way that's best for all of us? So let's listen to a little bit of a Walmart video. This is from October of last year, where Walmart assistant manager Alan Smith in Glenpool, Oklahoma, says the Auto-C autonomous floor cleaner makes employees' jobs easier.
I enjoy technology, yeah. The 2 hours that someone would have had to walk behind the scrubber is now 2 hours they can be doing something else in the store. So the technology they're putting in the store is what's making it easier to do our job, making it more efficient, lets us keep our price down.
That's Alan Smith in Glenpool, Oklahoma, in a Walmart video. Let's go now to Mark, who's calling from Niagara Falls, New York. Mark, do you work in a Walmart?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and have you?
And I have experience with the brain, ICE, intelligent cleaning equipment. It sends. You hook it up to your cell phone, and it sends you text messages when it needs help. The other night, it needed help at 11:07, 11:10, 11:20, 11:23, 11:25.
So it needed a lot of help. Okay.
It needed a lot of help. It's very slow. The time I take babysitting it, I could scrub rings around it with a Tennant T7 auto scrubber. Not to give them a plug. I don't have no stock in their company. But also, it's dangerous because you have to enter a PIN number to load programs, to program the thing and to set it on its course. But for some reason, you don't have to enter a PIN number to operate it manually. You put a poster on the board that it scans, on the wall that it scans, and it starts out there and does its route. And then it comes back and parks itself at that route and waits for an associate to come and assign it another route.
Uh-huh.
It's sitting there unattended, fully energized, where anybody can get up on it, and if they hit the accelerator, it will move.
They could just drive
That's
it around.
Safe.
Okay. Mark, can I ask you a couple of questions since you obviously, you know, you're working with these machines right now. You said that the floor cleaner needed your help like every 3 to 5 minutes the other night. What did it need your help for? What stopped it?
Aisle is blocked. It's aisle is blocked. It sends you a picture too, and it just says the aisle is blocked. And sometimes it isn't even blocked. It just can't make a corner. So you drive it till it's on the straight again, and then you hit a blue button in the back. There's a blue button on the back of it that you have to get it going again.
Uh-huh.
And
so it seems like
the time I take babysitting, I could scrub more than it does.
Yeah.
The guy that came in when he demonstrated. I'm sorry.
Oh no, go ahead, Mark. This is really interesting.
He gave it all the low hanging fruit, like wide open stuff that he ran interference for. It moved stuff out of the way. It won't even go anywhere near. There's an aisle with a post in the middle. You won't even get it through there.
Yeah.
It's just, it will do the easy stuff. And because we are being pressured to put hours on the machine, Goodhart's Law set in. They just put hours on the machine, even if it's not doing anything useful. Scrub the same alley that it don't bother you over and over again all night.
I see. Mark, I just want to ask you one more question. How is it changing how you view your work, and are you concerned about your job in the future?
Well, actually, I'm old enough to retire, and I'm really not one way or the other. But I think the bozos who make and sell this will be looking for something else to do before auto scrubber operators will. Thank you for hearing me out.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for your call. That's Mark from Niagara Falls, New York. Andrew McAfee, what do you think?
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was really articulate and really nicely said. But we need to keep in mind that innovation is not one-stop shopping. And the fact that the floor scrubber is not working well at all right now, according to Mark, and he's babysitting it instead of doing his job, that doesn't mean that will always be the case. And the progress that we're seeing with all the components of that technology, with sensing and with putting processing together and figuring out a smart path, we're seeing really rapid progress with all those things. So the fact that the robot scrubber doesn't work well today, that could be completely true, that does not tell us that much about 3 years from now, 5 years from now.
Hmm. Now, Erica Canuti, I know I've got to let you go here in a couple of minutes, but I did want to ask you about the fact that sort of what options or what levers unions like yours have. And folks, Erica is the communications director for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. So every time you negotiate a contract, it's an opportunity to help set sort of the terms of future work for your union members. So are issues of automation coming up in contract negotiations? I know the union has had quite a contentious time with Stop and Shop recently.
Yeah, we're having a very difficult time with Stop and Shop. And, you know, I was in actually some stores just a couple days ago and actually talked to some folks. They have their Marty the Robot in a box in the back just because of the same, you know, same types of concerns that this gentleman raised. It scares toddlers. It's 7 feet tall. So, you know, you have a family that's in there and a mom with some kids and her kids are freaking out. That's not a good customer experience. And they're worried about, you know, there's been customers who've been blocked into aisles and felt trapped and panicked. And they're worried about this turning off people to come into their stores. And will they continue to come back to Stop and Shop if it becomes the robot experience and not the friendly neighborhood store with the people who who care about you and you care about as well?
Right. So let me ask you more specifically, if I may, Erica. So, union contracts generally have provisions of, you know, what happens to workers or what rights workers have when there are layoffs, right, or downsizing. Are we going to see more union contracts that would have provisions in it that handle what companies would be obliged to do as automation comes in and the jobs that workers were originally hired to do are changing? Like, you know, the sections where it says if you introduce a robot, company X will also commit to training workers for a new kind of job.
Yes, we're actually researching a lot of different options and different avenues for that. Because again, we're not Luddites. Our members loved it when you didn't have to manually punch in 3.95 and you could just scan an item and have the price pop up. But you know, again, I'll go back to self-checkout, and this is an area that's very common in a lot of our contracts where, you know, we will say that we want for every, you know, 4 or 5 self-checkout bays that there needs to be a full-time staff person there dedicated to helping customers, you know, manage those machines and with any problems that pop up. I mean, anybody who's got a computer at home knows it doesn't solve all your problems. You know, you're sitting waiting for things to load, or sometimes it just malfunctions. And so, you know, we have been putting in our contracts to have people staffing and servicing customers even through quote-unquote self-checkout, because it isn't always as smooth in the ideal world, in the real world, as it would be in the ideal world. And so we're looking into other types of things and provisions like that. You know, part of this is that this is a, you know, an area where we have to, until they roll Marty the robot down the aisle, until we can hear from more from our members about how it actually works for their jobs, where they have to kind of, as the gentleman explained, in the case of Marty, it hijacks the PA system. So they can't call through the PA system to ask for help. Or as one member told me the other day, she had a small girl that had a seizure in the store, and she was worried about a Marty situation where she wouldn't be able to get help from the PA. Mm-hmm. How would she help that customer? So there's some safety concerns there, but we have to see how it works in the real world. Yeah. And then, you know, we have to work with companies to make sure that this is rolled out in a way that makes sense.
Well, Erica Canuti, Communications Director for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which represents 1.3 million workers in grocery stores, retail, and other industries in the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having us. This is a great conversation. I'm glad you guys are talking about this. Yeah. You know, it's something that's on everyone's minds, right?
Well, we're seeing it more and more in daily life. So, Erica, thank you again so much for being with us. Let's go back to our callers. Mike is calling from, I guess he's on the road in Central Virginia. Mike, I hope you're driving safely, but go ahead.
Actually, I pulled off to make sure I kept a strong signal.
Good. Thank you. Go ahead.
I run a small IT services company in Virginia here, and I actually do work on some of these systems on occasion. So I look at it as it'll provide opportunities for people to learn new skills, increase their skill sets, and when they learn these new things, it will give them opportunities to expand the type of work and the number of jobs they can do.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you for your call. I appreciate that you pulled over on the side of the road. The cell signal was okay, but perhaps not good for much more. But Mike, thank you. Andy McAfee, what do you think about what Mike said?
Yeah, I think this is an excellent point. Tech progress brings new kinds of demand for skills out there. And we do need to keep in mind that even in this era of really amazing tech progress that we're seeing, the U.S. economy has added net jobs month by month, I think for a record 102, 103 months in a row. We do not see massive technological unemployment in the evidence yet. Now, we have a job quality problem, but we don't really have a job quantity problem.
I see. So we've got Samuel Kirsch here on Twitter saying we should be more worried why our education system is still producing janitors in 2020. The robots have been coming since I was a child. No offense to custodians at all, Samuel says, but these jobs should no longer be needed and society can adjust, but we haven't. What do you think about that?
Well, I do think our educational system, especially the primary educational system, is doing a great job of turning out the kinds of workers we needed 75 years ago. And by that, I mean basic skills, reading, writing, arithmetic, and the ability to kind of listen to the voice of authority, teacher in the front of the room, and follow instructions. The technology is better at those things than we are now. It can do arithmetic better than we can, and it can follow instructions better than we can. Why we're drilling those skills into the heads of young people in this day and age seems a little crazy to me. Let's actually work on ideation, problem solving, creativity, interpersonal work. There's no shortage of demand for those skills out there.
Mm. Well, Third Way Forward is saying we need to find better ways of distributing work in a better fashion. The problem isn't automation per se, but that our economy is ill-suited to spread the work around. Ideally, as automation increases the efficiency of work and reduces the amount of tedious meaning labor that's necessary, we would cut back the work week. And Third Way Forward says, we should all be working less, and why not?
Yeah, and we're seeing that in some countries. I believe in the Netherlands, a really high percentage of adults, particularly women, are working short work weeks and enjoying, you know, the other hours in their week. That's easier to do when, for example, your health care is not so closely tied to your employment status. So we have this opportunity and I think a need to rethink the contract around work, to rethink the social safety net, to rethink things like where your health care and your benefits come from so that we can enable more choice among people. If you want to work 30 hours a week, you can probably have a decent standard of living from that. Let's make that easy instead of difficult.
Opportunity, I'd say even more strongly obligation, but are our political leaders meeting that obligation? Let's go back to the phones. Katie is calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Katie, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just going to say I'm an urban planner and I look at the economy and what people's role in it is, and I just don't think it's fair to paint this picture as humans versus robots. I don't think any company is pushing for full automation, and I don't see that realistically happening for a very long time, if ever, as, you know, all of the accounts from problems with the technology has been coming in and these phone calls. I think it should be phased in, obviously. Automation's happening. It's been happening, and I think we should embrace it. I think that what we're seeing, automation is a threat, when really we should be seeing it as an opportunity for different kinds of jobs. We should be training workers to do these other things. And I think that I agree with earlier callers that these companies are getting tax breaks. Maybe we should require them to train people. And I agree that the government, the school system should be doing more to train workers to be ready to go face a, you know, automating world.
Yeah. Katie, thank you so much for your call. So Andrew McAfee, Katie had an interesting idea there that, you know, if you're a company taking tax breaks from the government, maybe the government ought to be requiring something in return, more training. I mean, are there policy levers that we ought to be using much more efficiently?
Yeah, there are all kinds of great nudges out there, and companies respond with exquisite sensitivity to the tax code, for example. So if we want to see more training, we can provide incentives for that.
Well, the reason why I ask is because I'm thinking about, you know, all the workers out there who have just been recently displaced, if it's not immediately by technology, but by decisions that companies made, who literally have been abandoned. And the company didn't come back and say, well, you know, we're doing this because a robot can do it better, but we're going to retrain you. They just didn't. They were abandoned. So, you know, you can imagine there are a lot of people out there hearing this saying, yes, economy is transitioning, technology is transitioning, the horse and buggy analogy, which everyone always uses. But that as a society, we don't actually get any better at managing those transitions. We actually leave people out in the cold. What is going to make them feel better about the coming automation that might be hitting them now?
But let's be clear about one thing. If you make companies sign up for the obligation that they have to take care of that person for the rest of their career, they will not hire very many people. You'll have a walled garden with a small number of people with good jobs and the rest trying to get in. We should keep in mind America has many fewer longshoremen than it did 50 years ago, has many fewer farmers than it did 50 years ago. Industries change. And because of technology, we can have higher output in these industries. We bring in a lot more cargo than we did 50 years ago with fewer people. That is not bad as long as those people can then go transition, go do something else with the rest of their lives and their careers. That is not solely the responsibility of the company. I want to be clear on that.
Oh, but aren't there other countries? We just got 30 seconds left here to go. I think I remembered an article in the New York Times from about Norway, I think, that Norwegian companies aggressively retrain workers all the time as technology changes.
Yeah, I wish we took more cues from places like German-speaking countries, from the Scandinavian countries, Denmark's idea of flex security, where they protect the person and not the job. This is a really powerful idea. We over-focus on protecting the job here and now.
Well, Andrew McAfee, co-director of the MIT Initiative on the Digital Economy and associate director of the Center for Digital Business at the MIT Sloan School of Management. And he's also co-author of several books, including Machine Platform Crowd and The Second Machine Age. Andy McAfee, it's always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.